What is going on, guys? We are in the zone. Today is a really, really big episode. I'm here as always with Giancarlo Alino, and we are celebrating the 200th episode of In the Zone. It's crazy, Alino. 200 episodes. That is a lot. We've been doing this for 4 years now. Maybe, I think 4 years. 2018. Yeah, it's. What are your thoughts, man? 4 years kind of flies by, doesn't it?
It does. And like when we started it, it was before COVID and all this stuff. And then we went to Skype for a little bit, then YouTube. So it's been a fun ride. Nice little navigation of whatever's happening and everything, talking about all the ruckus that's happening in sports. So it's been a good one.
Yeah, man. It's always great talking with you with sports. It's always, we have a lot of laughs talking about wrestling, hockey. We both love Phil. We always somehow manage to talk about Phil Kessel all the time. So, but we got to get right into it today in our big, big episode. We're going to start it off with tonight. We got a big pay-per-view, Alino. We got Survivor Series War Games. There's only 5 matches that are announced here I'm looking at. Now, here's the thing, Alino. Are you kind of... I'm a little bit disappointed with the match card. I'm not going to lie to you. I know that there's 2 war game matches and they've been promoting the hell out of it. They disregarded the Survivor Series elimination, which to me always brings up my childhood. So I'm a little disappointed, but in other words, are you excited for the new war games stipulation? And do you think they got it right with the people involved in this one?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not too crazy about like them changing the format. Like it's one thing with the War Games match. I think that's what Survivor Series kind of needed. It just needed something different to make it feel special. But I don't like the way they got away from Raw versus SmackDown, like with the champions involved. I thought just the way the summer was looking, it looked like Bobby Lashley and Gunther were going to go at it. Like that would have been a huge match. And could add Roman, even though he's not a champion, like Seth Rollins involved at some point. Maybe you do Team Roman versus Team Seth and you get their teams involved. But it kind of seems like the Raw match, they went with the War Games for the men on the SmackDown side. And then for Raw, they went with the women on the War Games. So I see what they did with this year to try and make it feel like its own standalone annual thing with the War Games. But I think they should have went with brand versus brand for it.
I love it. And remember, I think it was 3 years ago when they even integrated NXT into the Survivor Series. And that was just phenomenal. That was, I'll never forget, Alino, the match with Roderick Strong. I'm trying to remember who the other two, I think it was Roderick Strong. Was it Shinsuke and Seth? I think those were the three involved. And then Roderick got the win. That was incredible. You had Keith Lee going off against Roman Reigns at points, and it just felt unique, whereas, like you mentioned, with the way that the card has looked, like Gunther, for me, is the biggest disappointment here. This is a top 4 pay-per-view of the year, and you're not going to have him on it after the last 4 months he's had. Just phenomenal wrestling. Imperium, to me, it would have made sense maybe to have, if you want to do a War Games, you do Imperium versus the Brawling Brutes, and then you can maybe do Roman versus, like you mentioned, Team Seth versus Team Roman. I think that would have maybe been a little bit better, but I think they're just going full on with the Sheamus momentum he's had. Just make him that top baby face, go off against Roman Reigns. Obviously, Alino, this beautiful, beautiful build with Sammy and Kevin Owens, I think it's going to lead to just either a tag team title win against the longest reigning Usos, or we might even see Sami Zayn take on Roman Reigns down the line. Out of those two options, Alino, which one are you more excited to see?
I think it'd be interesting to see Roman and Sami go one-on-one, but the way they have Kevin Owens involved, I would love to see them go after the tag titles, and perfect timing for them because Elimination Chamber, a couple pay-per-views away, like the next one's Royal Rumble, and then Elimination Chamber will be in Montreal, so if the Royal Rumble is where they finally do the big turn and everybody beats down on Sammy, I think Elimination Chamber would be nice to see both Canadians win the tag titles in Montreal.
Yeah, I would absolutely love that, man. I think it would be perfect timing. I was saying to you before the pod, Rich Holland, this is a kind of the coming out party for him, isn't it? He's never really had that main event match. What do you expect from Ridge and Butch, man, going into this one? Because we've seen everybody else basically at the main event level. Do you think they're going to be a little bit nervous in this spot, or do you think they're gonna shine here?
I think this is a perfect time for Ridge to shine because, like you mentioned here, like Pete Dunne, when he was in NXT, he already had that big push where he was a champion. Ridge has had an unfortunate year, like with the Big E stuff. And obviously that was an accident, but like everybody, every time he comes out, that's the first thing they think of. So he's got an opportunity here to make people forget about that and be known for something positive, like a great showing here. And I think he could have one. I think Sheamus is going to get the biggest pops, though. Drew and KO are involved, so they'll probably go on their programs with members of the Bloodline. But at the end of this, I think everybody's going to be talking about Sheamus being close to pinning Roman Reigns, but the Bloodline getting the win.
Yeah, I agree with you here. I think if I had to make that prediction, I'm taking the Bloodline. Roman just hasn't lost in so long, and I don't see them losing here. The only way I see them losing, Alino, is if Sami Zayn gets pinned, but I just don't see that happening. I think they're just going to drag this on a little longer. I will say, though, out of all the guys involved here, who do you think is the guy that takes the pinfall? Because I'm looking at all the guys. I think it has to be Ridge Holland. I just think it has to be.
Yeah, I think Ridge would be one of the ones that if you're going to sacrifice someone's popularity or just keep them all look strong, I think Ridge would be the safest option. They could go with Pete Dunne taking the pin, but I think Ridge will be the one there. Like, I don't think you want to take away Sheamus's momentum. I don't think you want to take KO's momentum just so soon after returning. So I think Ridge is taking the pin here tonight.
Yeah, man, I agree. The next match we have is underwhelming. I mean, Shotzi and Ronda Rousey. To me, this is probably one of the most underwhelming women's title bouts that I've seen in a long time, Alino. I hate to say it, just so cut and dry. I know Shotzi has the potential, but I just don't think she's ready in the spot where everybody's going to be cheering for Ronda. Nobody expects Shotzi to win. How do you think WWE, Alino, is going to go about this match? Do you think it's going to be a quick one? Do you think they're going to make Shotzi look, you know, like a decent contender, because everybody knows that she has no chance here?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if she gets one little offensive burst. Maybe has you believe, oh, she just caught Ronda with a kick or something, and I think Ronda just gets up and turns into a squash match. I think it'll be less than 5 minutes, and Ronda will call it a night. I think after the match is where it could be interesting. Like, we've seen with some of the other ones where somebody returns, maybe Charlotte, or maybe they go with Sasha Banks coming in this instead of after War Games, like the women's side. So I see Ronda's next opponent coming out there and them planting the seeds for Royal Rumble right after this match.
I think that has to be done, man, with Survivor Series. Charlotte Flair, to me, is the one that, as crazy as it sounds, Alino, everybody doesn't want to see her in the title scene, but I think at this point in time, you need Charlotte Flair in the title scene if their best contender is Shotzi Blackheart. So I agree with you. I think maybe after the match, you have Sasha or you have Charlotte Flair, or take this in. I don't know if she's hurt or not, but I think a Shayna Baszler versus Ronda Rousey would be phenomenal as well. But we got to move on. We both obviously think Ronda's winning this one. The next one we have is AJ versus Finn Balor. I think the build for this has been really, really good. Some people will say underwhelming with the Mia Yim return. I call me crazy, Alino. I got Finn Balor getting the win here. I don't see AJ Styles getting it done just yet. I think the Judgment Day, they're doing a tremendous job building them as credible villains on the Monday Night Raw roster. Who do you think wins this? Because Alino, call me crazy, I think this is also dragging to WrestleMania.
Yeah. This is going to be one of those matches where it's going to be better than the actual build for it. So DeSore, I think, are going to deliver, but I think AJ's going to get the win because Dominic's on the outside, and he crashed his own family's Thanksgiving party, pissed off his dad. So I think Ray's going to come out and cost Finn Balor the match and help the club, the OC there, get one over on the Judgment Day.
Hey, you know what? That would be appropriate. It's a couple days after Thanksgiving. He ruined the Thanksgiving dinner. Why not? His dad has to come out and, like, come on. Like, let's be honest here. He's in a knee brace, whatever the hell that was on that. I don't buy that for a second. I think Ray's going to come out, maybe just be a distraction. If he gets offense, he does. I don't see him. Maybe he gets that kendo stick and he starts wailing it on his own son. I think that would be a spot we would all want to see. But if Finn Balor loses in that regard, I'm all for that. So the next match we got is the we're going to talk about the women's war game match last. So we got the triple threat for the United States title. We got Seth Rollins, who it looks like, Alino, is slowly turning babyface at our very own eyes, taking on Lashley, who's coming off a really bad loss to Lesnar. And all of a sudden, we have a brand new Austin Theory, who actually looks like a legitimate contender to any given title. So, Alino, I'm going to ask you here. Is Seth frickin' Rollins retaining this and continuing this dominant babyface run, or are we going to maybe see Bobby Lashley get back his United States title?
I think we're going to, like, this is something similar to that War Games match where Ridge is in, I think, taking the pin. I think Austin Theory is in this just to come up short again. I think Bobby Lashley is going to be the most dominant guy in this match, but I think Seth is going to sneak one in there on Austin Theory, pin him, retain the title, and this is going to be another bold prediction here. I got Austin Theory doing a number on Seth, cutting a promo, and the You Can't See Me Man, his music hits, and he returns to his hometown, and him and Austin Theory get into a little confrontation. So I got John Cena and Austin Theory getting involved somehow after this matchup.
I would love that, Alino. That would be great. The build, the rumors, finally put all that to bed, because that would... The rumors for that, Alino, have been what? Like a year? Like, that's been a long time coming. I even remember when he came back on Raw, they hinted at that too. Theory taking the selfie and Cena just walks away. They've been hinting at that for a bit. So if Cena were to come out in his hometown and then, you know, Theory's, you know, saying, oh, this is my town now, Cena's dead, he's not here, and then Cena comes out, that would be monumental. Now, we saw last year, Alino, when Cena came back and confronted Reigns, that pop was massive. So I think that would be phenomenal for WWE programming. Triple H, just they continue to call him W. Hurst Helmsley because he just continues to just throw W's out there in the WWE universe. But we're going to end the Survivor Series preview with the Women's War Games match. We got Team Belair versus Team Bayley. Bianca, Alexa Bliss, Asuka, Mia Yim, and Becky taking on Damage Control with Nikki Cross and Rhea Ripley. Alino, call me crazy. I think we see a heel turn here with Alexa Bliss realigning with Nikki Cross.
Oh, man. Yeah, like Alexa Bliss, I think everyone's going to look at here, because if there's one person off that team that hasn't really had that momentum since even joining everything and this whole team with Asuka, it's probably Alexa Bliss. So this could be a way for them to regain that, maybe with The Fiend or Bray Wyatt lurking backstage. They're teasing something there, but her and Nikki again as a team, as a heels, like no characters, no costumes, like all that other superhero stuff. Like they just went with their character now, I think could be interesting. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I don't see Bayley losing this just because she hasn't won anything recently. So I think, again, it's kind of like with the men's match. I really don't know who's going to get the pinfall. If there is one person that I do think is going to take the pinfall, I think it might have to be Alexa Bliss or maybe Mia Yim. But Mia Yim just returned, so it's definitely not Belair or Becky, for sure. It's not going to be one of those two. But Alina, who gets the pinfall? Is it going to be Rhea Ripley? Are they going to continue to build her up as that main event type superstar? Or do you think it's going to be Bayley who gets the pinfall?
Yeah, you can make a case for both. I think if Bayley gets a win, it'd be like a big, like much needed one, because she's come up short in a lot of her feuds. So they could go with her that direction. But like you said there, like Rhea has been built up so much that she wins here, that can just set her up for a title match. So I think either one of those two will be the reason why their team wins. I don't think they'll do a swerve there and have Dakota Kai get the win or Io get the win. So I think Bayley or Rhea should be the one that leads to their team getting it.
I like it. Let's have some fun tonight, man. It's a short card. There's only five on the slate for Survivor Series, but as always, it always delivers, in my opinion, Survivor Series. I don't remember, maybe 2013 was the last one that was just terrible. Like, I remember Randy Orton and Big Show main evented that, and that was like one of the worst things I've seen in a long time. So I hope this delivers tonight. Again, like we mentioned at the beginning, it is different. There's no elimination tag, but I do think the War Games match can deliver, and let's just hope Sheamus's momentum continues, because we all love seeing the Celtic Warrior get his moment again. So with that being said, though, we're going to quickly recap Full Gear that happened last Saturday. And Alino, man, this one was just absolutely phenomenal. I thought this pay-per-view was better probably than All Out. Like, this one was, I loved seeing Chris Jericho defeat Bryan Danielson, Claudio, and even Sammy Guevara. And also, I gotta say, like, this guy has been, like we said last week, out of the three guys in the match, that Samoa Joe was not gonna get the win. Samoa Joe gets the job done and gets the TNT championship. Alino, out of all the 13 matches that you saw last week, which one was the best to you? Which one stood out? And what do you think is, you know, what do you think is the future of AEW? Like, because we saw the Elite come back. We saw MJF finally get his moment. What do you expect for AEW in the next coming?
Yeah, so there, I can't believe, like, you called it there, like 13 matches on the card. It was a little long of a pay-per-view, not gonna lie. Like, if they did like 8 matches, I think that would have been nice, but 13's a little too much. I know they want to get their money's worth for fans, but I think the Elite's match, especially where it was placed as a second match, I think that delivered. That was fun. You had everything in there. Rey Fénix looked amazing, like usual. Kenny Omega looked like he hasn't missed a beat. Looks like he's finally fully healthy. So those matches, that whole series they're going to have, was great. And MJF getting the win. So those are, I think, the most the highlights there. But Samoa Joe, Hobbs going at it with Wardlow, that was a low-key one of the matches of the night for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I also loved seeing the Acclaimed beat Swerve in Our Glory too. Like, the Acclaimed to me has been one of the best stories of AEW the last like 5 months. William Regal, man, that sneaky guy just turns on Jon Moxley, and MJF finally gets his moment, man. This is going to be, I think, a phenomenal title run. We saw, you know, Kenny had a pretty long run. Paige, I don't think, had the longest run. Jericho had a pretty long run as well. But Alino, do you think MJF is going to hold it for like years? And as well, who's the guy that's going to take it off MJF? Because to me, I think it's either Omega or it's Adam Cole.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a nice long run for him. I don't see it being like a year going past Full Gear, but I think maybe Double or Nothing, so just before they get to that year mark, I think is where he'll have it, and maybe lose it in sneaky fashion where he turns to a baby face, like what we thought was going to happen when you were going into this match. And I think the Cleaner might be one of the guys involved. I think it'll be like those multi-man matches, and I'm not going to say it's too unrealistic or impossible, but with all these people having a connection to CM Punk. You got Kenny Omega, you got MJF, John Moxley. Like, what if it's a multi-man, four-man match? You got Kenny Omega, Hangman, John Moxley, and MJF, and that's where you end MJF's reign, and CM Punk makes his return as a bad heel. So I wouldn't put that, I wouldn't rule that out, but I think CM Punk could be a guy that comes back to AEW as a heel.
Yeah, I could see that. I think with CM Punk, regardless, you're going to get, whether it's negative or positive press, you're going to get that marketability again, like we've talked about so many times. And like, it doesn't matter if he's washed, if he's a little bit older, he's going to get the pops. He's going to get the chance. I just think this whole storyline, what happened with the Elite, I think this is just a rest period for Punk. I agree with you. I think he's just off with injury. Give the guy his recovery, maybe come back in the new year, maybe around March, and we'll see what CM Punk can do, because, you know, everybody talks, hey, is CM Punk going to go back to WWE? I don't see that happening with Triple H in charge. So I just think CM Punk being, you know, always lingering around in the main event scene, especially with MJF now as your champion, I think that's just must-see TV, and that's going to leave a lot of wrestling fans on the edge of their seat in regards to AEW. But we saw Jade Cargill, man, defeat Nyla Rose. She's still undefeated. Alino, like, who's going to be the one that takes down Cargill? Because it's not looking like there's any realistic contender right now to take her down.
Yeah, I think they're going to eventually book themselves in a corner, kind of like with Goldberg when his streak had to end. And by keeping it running this long, you know somebody has to end it. And when they end it, it might not be the biggest of reactions that they hoped, or it might not be a positive result. So I think they should end it before it gets too much and like fans start getting too connected to it, because you can also start a new streak and have like a storyline where she has to get back and have another long streak again. Maybe she goes on a losing streak, loses like some matches, just dominating, and then lose at the end. So I think this could be something where it doesn't go on too long. Maybe at Revolution, their first pay-per-view of AEW's 2023 calendar year, that would be a nice way to end the streak in sneaky fashion.
I just don't know who it's going to be, man. There's just so many women she's just killed. So like, would it be, like, I hate to say this because I don't want it to happen, but would it be Saraya? Like, would she be the one to kind of go in there and beat Cargill? Because she got that win over Britt Baker. A lot of people were not happy about that. I myself included was not happy about that. But, you know, if she's back and she's a top babyface, why not beat Jade Cargill, right?
Yeah, it could make sense if they want to go in that direction. I know it won't be the most positive thing. That's why it's probably best that maybe have somebody who has a momentum, like a Hater, to get that win. Or even before she got injured, Thunder Rosa was somebody that it looked like she was positioned for that. But I agree with you. It's going to be a lot. People are going to talk about that. And if it's a negative result, they might have some negative feedback for it. So it's going to be interesting to see who eventually gets that big win.
And now we saw on Dynamite, man, he's gonna, it looks like Daniel Bryan's gonna be feuding with Moxley. Bryan, man.
Oh. Oh, yeah, some technical stuff. Do you hear me okay?
I was just going to say, what do you expect with Daniel Bryan and Moxley if they feud, man? Because I saw on Dynamite that do you think they're going to turn on each other?
Yeah, it would make sense now because, like, everything that happened with Regal, I think they should just disband the group at this point. Like, Claudio's going after Jericho, and if he loses, apparently the stipulation is he has to join the Jericho Appreciation Society and guess reform that team with Hager. That would be interesting. So I think they should just go in that direction. Have Claudio lose to Jericho, join that group, and you have Moxley and Bryan Danielson go at it again and just restart that feud that eventually started this group in the first place. So Regal being involved only makes things a little, I guess, interesting. Like Moxley, I don't think is going to be the one to turn heel. So that leaves Bryan Danielson to go heel again. And I think you can have Regal choose Bryan Danielson and make him a heel again.
I would love that, man. That would be phenomenal. But now we got to quickly go on. We're going to talk now about the World Cup, which to me, Aulino, has been underwhelming. I'll say that. It just hasn't been a good World Cup for me. Just not enjoying it at all. We're going to start it with Argentina losing to Saudi Arabia. Aulino, how the hell did that happen? I want a Rolls Royce. Like, I don't understand how Argentina loses 2-0 to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, man, those guys can retire right now. They won the World Cup in their country's eyes, and then when they go back, they're gods over there now. A Rolls Royce Phantom for beating Argentina at the World Cup in the first game of a group stage. Sign me up for that. Like, those guys are set. I would just retire from the game after that and enjoy it, because I don't think they'll ever have to worry about like what result comes after. They're like legends in their country's soccer history now just because of that one game and that one win.
Yeah, man, I don't know how that happened, but you got to give them all the credit in the world. They played well. Argentina was kind of flat. But no, I also want to talk a little bit more about Canada. You know, they faced Belgium in the first game on Wednesday. They looked really good, Aulino. They looked a lot better than I thought. I thought Davies looked like he belonged. Larea looked great. David looked great. What did you expect, man, with that game? Because I didn't see Canada winning. I thought Belgium was going to end up winning the game eventually. But that game could have gone a completely different way. Of course, Courtois did not save that penalty kick. And he just made a couple other amazing saves. So moving forward, Aulino, after that game you saw with Belgium, like, do you expect Canada to make it through? Because it's looking pretty likely.
Yeah, I was impressed with that. Like you mentioned there, they showed that they belonged. And like Richie Larea, TFC guy, this is a guy that couldn't really get time at Nottingham Forest when they were in the second division battling up to get the Premier League. And then Nottingham Forest just decided, okay, we'll loan you back out. You can go back to Toronto FC. And they'll probably, after this World Cup, I wouldn't be surprised if Nottingham Forest just say, yeah, screw that. We're going to recall him from the loan and put him back on our main club. Alistair Johnson's another one. Vaughn soccer guy comes in. And everything he's done in MLS so far, he's, you know, a lot of people would say he's out of his element there, going up against some of the top Belgium stars, and he shuts a lot of them down. His teammate there, Kamal Miller, incredible at center back, just shutting guys down the whole game. He was crucial, breaking up plays, and those guys are playing in MLS. So, you know, Alistair Johnson's already linked to Celtic, so that's one of the big money moves that are going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if we see after this World Cup three or four more guys being their value going up and them being transfer targets for some big teams in Europe.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest advantages for Canada that I saw was their pace of play. They looked a lot quicker than a lot of teams, I think, anticipated. And yeah, you know, there wasn't no Romelu Lukaku or Eden Hazard. They weren't in the lineup, but you said it perfectly there. Our defense looked really good. They shut down the world-class players that they're playing against. And I think if we can get a really good performance out of Larea and David and Davies for almost every single game, you're probably going to expect four really high-scoring chances. And if Canada can capitalize on at least two of those, you know, they could win games. So Croatia's a lot slower paced of a team. They have masterful midfield, though. Their midfield is incredible. I think if we can get it to the wings and just continue with that pace, I think we could score an early goal against Croatia. I'm not I'm not saying that we're going to easily beat Croatia. They went to the World Cup final in 2018, but this is a much older team. We're a team, like I mentioned, based on narrative. We're really motivated to make a name in this tournament. So I think Canada, man, honestly, we didn't get a point in the first game, but I really do like their chances the rest of the way in this tournament. And if this tournament is really, you know, said anything, is anybody can win on any given night. So I think Canada has a really good shot here. For example, right now, Alino, France and Denmark are tied 1-1. So anything is possible. You could be a top five club, international club, you can still lose. So I think Canada, really good spot right now.
Yeah, it's going to be a truculent game tomorrow.
I just think, let's talk quickly more about the juggernauts here. Like Spain, 7 goals against Costa Rica. This was a team, Alino, where I'm going into the tournament. They're a much younger team than expected. Dani Olmo looks incredible. Pedri looks incredible. Gabby looks incredible. Is this team the real deal, Alino? Do you see Spain being a potential World Cup finalist?
I think they're the real deal for now, like in the group stage, but like I want to see still like how they play against Germany. I think a lot of people expected that kind of result that they had the first game. Maybe not 7 goals, but just the quality you can tell was a lot higher. There's a big difference in their star players and the much older side there. But I think we'll see Spain's quality against Germany, and then we'll see if they are going to be those true contenders. I think they could make it to like the round of 16 and quarterfinal, make some noise there. But as an overall favorite, I see them getting out the furthest in the quarterfinal.
I like that as well. Alino, Germany lost to Japan. If Germany loses to Spain, their World Cup is done. They're done. They're out. Did you anticipate that from Germany to potentially be out after 2 games?
No, I thought they were going to cruise through this group and maybe get some like 2-0 wins every game. I thought Japan beating them was a nice little swerve. They threw a wrench in those plans, and now this group is exciting because now you got 3 teams that are must-win situations and every game out, because I don't think Costa Rica is going to go anywhere. I think they're going to be the team everyone takes points off of. But now you got Spain, you got Japan, and you got Germany fighting just to stay alive in the tournament. So this group now becomes a lot more exciting.
Now, the other couple teams I want to talk about, obviously, Brazil. Richarlison looked phenomenal, man. The guy scoring that beautiful goal. I think that was against, was it Switzerland? Trying to remember who they beat, but Brazil looks as dominant as they are. Neymar, Alino, is to miss the rest of the group stages with a sprained ankle. Does this put any wrench in Brazil's plans, or do you just see them just cruising through, going to the knockouts and having a healthy Neymar?
Yeah, I think it's probably for the best that he takes a group stage off and not risk like damaging his ankle anymore. And as we saw that first game, I don't think they need them in the group right now. They went through pretty easily. They can just change their formation and have another attacking midfielder out there, just move up into a forward position. So that team is so deep at forward and mid that I don't think they can I don't know what will be too damaging to them without Neymar in the last 2 games. I think maybe in the knockout rounds it'll be a lot more. But right now they can just manage with it and just maintain their style and probably even still put up 2-3 goals a game.
Who do you think's the guy that's going to break out without Neymar? Is it going to be Jesus, or do you think it's more of a guy along the lines of the guy who broke out last year with Real Madrid and Vinny?
Yeah, I think this is Vinny's time now, because a lot of talk has been on like Neymar. This is possibly his last World Cup. I don't see it. Like, I know they all want to put that narrative out there, but he's got to like go another. He's still pretty young. I think another World Cup in him, but Vinny is unbelievable. I think he's going to be the next guy that everybody looks at in Brazilian soccer, and this is going to be 2 breakout performances for him, and maybe put some more attention on the other players of Brazil, because obviously Neymar is going to get it. Everything he accomplished, he's a big name, and he plays in PSG, so he attracts all that, and I think Vinny now is going to show that he's just as big a star, if not bigger, than Neymar.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, Mbappe, I think, just scored. 2-1 France now. Damn it. Okay, well, the last one that I want to talk about, Alino, and then we'll talk more about the games that are going to happen. That Portugal game, man. Like 3-2 to Ghana, all the goals in the second half. Ronaldo scoring the penalty kick because it's Ronaldo. Obviously, he's going to get that call. Was that a penalty? I don't think it was, and I don't know what it is with Portugal, man. I don't like. To me, that was a disappointing game for them. They did not look good defensively at all. And if Ghana's going to score two on you when you get into the knockout stages, like, what the hell's going to happen?
Yeah, this was, I think it was a makeup call, because like the first goal, you can argue that Ronaldo's, like when he scored, that should have been allowed. They disallowed it. And I think the referee, which is unfortunate, it's like, you know what, I'm going to make up for this. And he gave the soft penalty. I don't think that was a penalty. So Ronaldo takes advantage. He scores his monumental milestone for his career and goes 5 World Cups with a goal. I think it should have been that first one. I think that would have ruined the whole tempo of the game, because you give a soft penalty like that after Ghana was playing the way they did, and then after it puts everything, like, you have to force everyone to play harder. They score again, and Ronaldo comes off the field, and Ghana scores that other goal, and he does a Ronaldo celebration. So there was a nice little moment there, and just pushing each other's buttons. But yeah, like, that penalty shouldn't have been awarded. It was soft, and I think it was just a goalie making up for a call earlier.
Yeah, I agree. That was not a penalty. I saw the replay so many times. I was like, nah, man. That, like, the penalty against Canada with Witsel was more of a penalty than the Ronaldo one. So that kind of angered me a little bit. Wasn't the greatest call by the ref, but hey, Portugal always finds a way, don't they? They always find a way to get a win, get a point. Keep the wheels rolling, and then they go to the knockout stages, and all of a sudden they're Euro Cup champions. So we'll see what happens with Portugal. I mean, they're going to get their bounces. They do have a great player in Leao who did score. He looked incredible in the game as well. But we're going to quickly look at some of the games today, Alino. Like, you got Argentina today taking on Mexico. That is a must-win for Argentina. They have to win this game. If they don't win, Messi's fifth World Cup is a waste. So if you're Argentina, are you just going full attack mode here and not really worrying about defense, or are you just relying more on a 1-0 win? Because if I'm Argentina, man, I'm going full tilt in the first 10-15 minutes of this game.
Yeah, if I'm Argentina, guns blazing now. You're going out, throwing all the attackers out there, maybe having a 5-man attack, and don't even worry about have 2 defensive mids just to balance out the defenders on the back line. But this team was a laughingstock now after that first week. They heard everybody talking about Saudi Arabia. They have that famous picture there, it looks like, or it's going to go on, and I guess Saudi Arabia soccer history of Messi looking down as they're celebrating after winning their biggest upset. And they've just had to hear that all week. Like, Argentina, what a disgrace to them, like, type of thing. And they got to turn it around and have some positive press on their end, because if Messi goes out with 2 losses and the 2 teams were Saudi Arabia and Mexico, it's going to damage how a lot of people view his legacy as an international player and more than a club player, obviously. But they really need this win, because Mexico wasn't the best team in CONCACAF. They were like probably 3rd, arguably, even now. Like, Canada and the U.S. are way better. So they need this result bad.
I agree. I think Argentina has to win this game. If they don't win, I don't even know what to say anymore. Like, that would to me would be with the biggest disappointment. I was saying to you before the pod, since Brazil lost, what, 7-2, 7-1, national tournaments, not in the World Cup, but, you know, in that other, I mean, like, they always come so close and they never get the job done, but they've always made it past group stages. So if Argentina can't they can't beat Mexico. If they even get 1 point, they're in trouble. So it's a must win. Oh man, I was talking about the World Cup, and I was talking about, you know, I think Germany and Spain, like, that's a game where, like, for Spain, I wouldn't be surprised if they took their foot off the gas a little bit, because, you know, they got 7 goals against Costa Rica, and the goal differential for them is basically locked up. But Germany has to win the game. If they don't win this game, their tournament, just like Argentina's, is almost done. So I was just saying, Nalino, like, who do you have winning that game? Because, like, Germany's at plus 190, and I think they need it more than Spain.
Yeah, that's going to be – I think Spain is going to be coming into with a mentality that we can afford to get a point here. Like, everybody thought Germany would come in and be the favorites to win the group. So I think Spain's in a favorable spot. They can just manage the tempo, make sure that they don't give a bad goal out. But Germany, I think, is going to have a lot more urgency in their attack. Like, this is do or die for them pretty much, and they really need a win, because – Japan pretty much like just came in and disrupted everything with their win, beating out Germany first time out. And if they get a win, they're on to the next round. So Germany needs goals, and against a team like Spain, it's not going to be like easy getting the ball, because they're going to be playing with it, passing around, and trying to use their style more. But this is a game that favors Spain, I think, just the way they like to play. And I think Germany, unfortunately, could be on the outside looking in next round.
Man, that would be crazy. What do you think about England, man? England, you know, they came out, they beat Iran 6-2, and then they can't register a goal against the States. If you're an England fan, I mean, you're not, but like a guy like me that loves England, are you a little worried with them going up against Wales, or do you think England's just going to win a boring 1-0 game against Wales?
Yeah, I am actually. If I'm an England supporter, I'm worried, because a team against the States, I think, was a good matchup for England to come in, get another 3 points. Right at the end there, you saw Harry Kane, that set piece. He heads the ball, misses the net, but that was a perfect set piece that Harry Kane should have scored on. Like, that's a typical goal that he likes to get in that area, get a header. And we were talking about like a late goal then for England, and 3 points, and they can go on against Wales and be comfortable. But now this is going to be tough, because like Wales, this is like a rivalry game type of thing. Bale's going to play for his World Cup life here, and I see a sneaky draw. It's like 1-1. I see it's going to be like a back and forth, a lot of cards coming up, a lot of fouls. It's going to be one of those games, and I think whoever goes through, it's going to come down to goal differential. So U.S. and Iran now, they're in a position where that's even a must win. So a lot of excitement now going to match three, where probably expected coming into this, England would be up 6 points and comfortably onto the next round.
It always happens with England, man. They always disappoint somehow. So we're going to see what happens there. But we're going to quickly move on to hockey. I just was going through the lines before it cut out. I guess we won't talk about the Edmonton game because it literally starts in 10 minutes, but I was saying I'd probably take Edmonton because the Rangers are coming off a West Coast road trip, and we all know how those road trips go. They're just really exhausting. And when you go back home and you're taking on Connor McDavid, who's been in New York, Alino, take this in. They've been in New York the last 2 days because of they had to face the Islanders. So I think the Oilers win that one outright at plus money, so I would take that. But the first one, I guess, that we could talk about, Alino, is the Flames and the Carolina Hurricanes today. The Flames are at plus 122, and the Hurricanes are minus 146. I don't know. Like, this is an interesting one here. I don't think I have either faith in any team. If I did, it would probably be Carolina at home, as their fan base is just nuts. So who are you taking there, Alina? Are you taking Carolina, or would you maybe go with the upset here in Calgary?
Yeah, I don't know what happened to Calgary like the last month. It's just the type of team they have, the type of coach. Like, you would think it would be a perfect style that they would can continue on where they were last year. Markstrom hasn't been that goalie that you would look at, like a Shesterkin type of thing, where you're going to get a win most of the time. So Calgary's struggling. I think this is a good game for Carolina to come out, get another 2 points, and like start closing the gap in the division, because as teams start creeping in later on, I think they could put themselves in a good position going into the new year where they can look around at some trade targets and not have to put themselves in a position where they're desperate just to add a forward and give up too much of a return, like a prospect and a pick. Like, find a player out there that's going to be available that makes sense to your lineup without totally doing too much damage and trading a lot of pieces out to add one that might get you like a few more points down the road.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I think Carolina would be the play there, but you know, now we got to go to the Blues and the Panthers, man. Like, why is the line at -235 for Florida?
This is a crazy one.
I don't understand that. Like, you have the money line at -235, and then, like, I'm taking the Blues at +1.5. Like, that would be, like, that's the easiest thing I've ever seen. -130 for the Blues, who have been phenomenal against Florida, at -132. Like, the Blues, dude, are incredible. They're a team that has continued to be slept on because of that 7-game losing streak that they were on at the beginning of the year. This is not a bad hockey team at all. If anything, this is a playoff team in St. Louis. So I would take the Blues there, no doubt about it. I know you're a big Bobrovsky guy. I think he's in net today, but I don't see them blowing out St. Louis here.
Yeah, Bobrovsky, I don't know if he's going to shut the door here. I think there's going to be a lot of goals scored both ways, but I think I'm with you. I think St. Louis, this is a situation, I think, where if people are looking at the lines and stuff, like, St. Louis might be a positive one to circle because everyone's looking at that losing streak and coming to the conclusion that they're not a playoff team anymore. They're not that elite team. So this is a team that you can profit on and take advantage of people's perceptions on them. So I got St. Louis in this one too.
Hey, let's go to the Leaf game, because I mean, their blue line is depleted, man. They have no defense. They have Connor Timmins now. They got Mac Hollowell. Like, these guys are not NHL defensemen. I hate to say it, but you're taking on the Penguins, Aldino, and they are fun. Like, the Penguins have been rolling recently. I got to take the Penguins here, man. Like, the Leafs, you know, the last two games, they're on a 2-game winning streak without Morgan Riley. I think this is the game where Sidney Crosby, I think, exposes these young, inexperienced defensemen, and I got the Penguins winning tonight.
I'm going to go. I think Murray should play this if you're the Leafs. I know it's a back-to-back and he was recently injured, but like, this is a guy that he has a chance to take on his old team, one of his old teams, and they pretty much replaced them with Jarry. So if you're Matt Murray, I think that motivates you a little more. I think they should take advantage of that and put him in net tonight. And you look at the Leafs D core, I look at it and, like, you know what? They can still grind out a win like they did against New Jersey and yesterday against Minnesota. So I got Mitchie picking up the slack again. Tavares getting another big game and turning back the clock to 2010. And I got the Leafs getting a win here and continuing on this positive run.
Yeah, man. Mitch Marner's on a 15-game point streak. That's incredible. So Good on Mitchie. He's silencing all the critics there. But then, of course, Aline, we got the Red Hot Devils taking on the Caps. And the Devils in regulation, you don't see it there on the lines, but it's at -122. Are you slamming that, or are you going with the Capitals to win? Or maybe even you could go with an OV goal.
Yeah, I think the OV goal is more likely. Like, this one could go either way, like, especially with New Jersey. Like, we haven't seen this where they go on this long winning streak and then it gets snapped. And now we have to see if this team is for real and legit and they can bounce back from that loss and not end up going on a even longer losing streak than their winning streak. And we see them at the bottom of the standings looking for a first overall pick. So I think New Jersey is a big one for them. I don't know if I see Washington winning in that number. I see an overtime win, and I got Ovi scoring. I would go for Ovi scoring and an OT win there by Washington.
I like that. And then we got the Flyers, who I think are the worst team in the league, man. Like, they don't look – I feel for Tortorella, man. He gets another coaching job, and just nothing's going his way. I mean, he started the year really good. Carter Hart has been really, really good. But you have Ilya Sorokin and the Islanders who look really, really good. Looks like they're exactly where they left off from 2 years ago when they went to the conference finals there against Montreal. What are your thoughts, Alino, on this Islander team? Because I think they're a little bit overrated here at minus 245. I think I would maybe go under six goals with Sorokin and Carter Hart in that. And what do you see the Flyers finishing lower than the Coyotes?
I see them having a decline as the season goes on. I think right now, though, this is a trap game for the Islanders. I see Philly winning tonight, and we'll see a nice positive response from Torts. But by the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised if Philly's in the bottom five and making a push there for Connor Bedard.
Yeah, man, it's tough to see with Philly because their fans are so rowdy and they're not getting any results. But then we got to go to Dallas and Colorado. That's a great game. Jason Robertson, Alino. This guy looks like an MVP candidate. He's got 18 goals in 21 games. He has been a monster. Dallas at plus money here looks pretty tempting, but I do like the under 6.5, as I do like when these two guys play each other, Dallas and Colorado, this is a gritty war. So I like the under, but I think I would go with the Colorado Avalanche to win the game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to come down to goaltending. And like Colorado, since losing Kemper, they're trying to make Gorgiev. It seems like they want him to be that guy, but it's going to be a process, I think. Like, you can't just throw him in there after he's been so used to being a backup and expect him to have that same poise like a guy who's used to playing 55 to 65 games a year. So it's going to come maybe until like March, end of February, before we see who their number one is going to be for the end of the year. But I think right now they should be able to get the win. Robertson's tear right now is impressive. Clearly, Dallas got a gem with him. And I'm interested to see who else on their roster could step up, because like Ben, can he have a good win? Like game, I don't know. Sagan, could he turn things around? Hintz has been another guy to look at. But I got Robertson getting another goal, continuing the streak, and Colorado getting one.
And then, of course, the last game on the slate, Alina, we got Vancouver and Vegas. This, to me, is going to be a high-scoring game. This is going to be like a 7-3, I think. Vegas is coming off a loss to Seattle. I don't know how that happened, but it happened. Vegas is looking dominant. Jack Eichel looks like he's back to his elite ways. Mark Stone is incredible. Logan Thompson, Alina, looks like a really good starting goalie. Are you hammering Vegas here, or or do you think this is kind of like the Philly game where it's a trap play here with Vancouver?
Yeah, Vancouver, I'm just surprised. Like, the kind of players you have on that team, like, if you look at them on paper, you would not expect them to be, like, a team every other one is, like, taking points off of, and they're bottom of the standings type of team. Like, I would expect Vancouver to be leading the division with the talent they have, but hasn't gone their way. And, like, Demko, I don't know what's going on with him, but that's a guy I still think is an elite goalie. I got Vegas winning tonight, and I'll go another one just to add more value on it. Phil Kessel getting a goal.
I love that. I think Phil Kessel would also get a goal. I like his – I'm trying to find his point prop here. His to get a point is plus 128. I think I would take
Phil – he's an assist guy right now.
I think I would take Phil Kessel to get a point, and his assist line is at plus 220. So if Phil Kessel were to get an assist, that's a pretty big return. If you want him to get a goal, that's at plus 360. So regardless, you want to target Phil Kessel tonight, that's a great profit right there. So if hey, man, you know what? Another line that I like in that game, I really like Jack Eichel to score. I think he's been on another level this year. He's at plus, what is it here? Plus 154 to score. I think Eichel he's been on a different level this year. Vancouver has probably the worst penalty kill in the league. They just allow so many power play points. And hey, if you want to put Phil Kessel to pass it to Jack Eichel to score, that's a pretty big penny back. So I'm looking forward to that game, the late night game. I think that's going to be a high scoring one. We got a lot of action though tonight, Alina. We got to watch Survivor Series. There's hockey on. There's the World Cup on this afternoon. It's just going to be an eventful Saturday. But as always, Alino, this was episode 200. We had a couple hiccups in this episode, a couple technical difficulties. But, hey, it happens with technology, man. It's never going to be 100%. And maybe once things start to calm down, we might be going into a studio soon. So we look forward to that. So with that being said, this is episode 200. A milestone episode. This is Chris Martelli, Giancarlo Alino, signing out.